Yes, folks, this isn't any cheap X-rated movie or any fifth-rate porno play. This is the show you want. Lady Divine's Cavalcade of Perversions, the sleaziest show on Earth. Not actors, not paid imposters, but real, actual filth who have been carefully screened in order to present to you the most flagrant violation of natural law known to man.
John Waters is known mostly for his absurdist comedies, often done on purpose in the very worst of taste. His second feature film, Multiple Maniacs, provided a fair share of shocks, with Mr. Waters' iconic star Divine playing the leader of a traveling freak show called the Cavalcade of Perversions. A new restoration of the 1970 film opens tomorrow at the IFC Center, and I'm pleased that it has brought John Waters back to our show. Welcome back.
Thank you. I never thought I would be back here with a movie I made almost 50 years ago, but it's kind of hilarious and great.
Some directors don't like looking at their early works, but you wrote in your memoir, Shock Value, that Multiple Maniacs is your favorite of all your films.
Well, I wrote that in 1980. I made a lot of movies since then. I
always thought it was the new one that people loved. My latest baby is always the
best. No, I think Serial Moms may be the best movie I've ever made if you look at it from every viewpoint. But Multiple Maniacs is one that is now, I think, the reviews so far have been great. And they were all horrible then. It's because you're seeing this weird movie in a time capsule. And you even see a calendar in the background that says 1969 in it, so when we shot it. So basically, to see it today in this kind of political climate, when it was a movie made to offend hippies in a good way, because we were kind of yippies, so it was kind of making fun of it. But that's who came. My audience was definitely people that wanted to have their sensibilities flailed a little bit.
You not only directed Multiple Maniacs, you also produced, wrote, and edited it. Were you involved in the restoration?
Yes, I was. And I think, Criterion came to me with Janus's the theatrical release, and it was so great to me because all the first art films from Bergman I saw were from Janus Films. And Criterion, they really had the right idea, because we first talked about, do you want to restore it with all the mistakes like it originally was to keep the flavor, or do you want to make it look as good as we can possibly do? And then I saw what they could do. I said, are you kidding? I never wanted those mistakes. This is what I wanted it to look like then, only didn't know how to do it. So it seems new today. It's a different ratio. I said in the press release, it finally looks like a bad John Cassavetes movie.
But you still have actors flubbing their lines.
Yeah, well, sort of flubbing. Yeah. Well, they have to memorize 4 pages of dialogue in one scene because we filmed with a single system camera where the sound was right on the film, so you couldn't cover a scene like you do today.
And you had very long takes.
Well, you had to, because the sound was 24 frames ahead of the picture. You had to overlap that 24 frames on every cut. So not like today where you shoot a scene from 5 different angles and you edit together. There was no negative. This is reversal film. It was before video, and it's what all news teams use to shoot the news.
Why did you take on all the different roles? Couldn't you have gotten some other people, for example, to do the camera work or to
Well,
do
I
the
should
editing?
Have. It would have been better, as I learned later. But no.
It was that low budget?
Yeah, it cost $5,000, the whole movie. And most of that was for the tent rentals for the Cavalcade of Perversion and the Roman soldiers outfit for the Stations of the Cross.
It contains a lot of nudity, some crass behavior.
Not much nudity.
Okay, some nudity.
Yeah.
Crass behavior, yes.
Lots
language,
of that.
A few things I don't even want to talk about on the air. Did you have any issues getting it screened originally?
Oh, of course. Are you kidding? It never had real distribution. I went around the country with it and opened it in churches, oddly enough.
Churches?
Yeah, because you forget. You might remember. Remember Judson Memorial Church? Mm-hmm. All the churches had left-wing things in the 60s, anti-war movements. The Black Panthers could meet there. So they would always say yes to me. They didn't see the movies. They figure anything to get his friends in a church. Believe me, this is the only way they're ever going to be in there. And they would freak out a little when they saw the movie, especially Multiple Maniacs, because it has a scene that's pretty sacrilegious.
There's a scene that takes place in a church.
Yes.
How did you get permission to shoot in a church, or did you just shoot?
No, we knew the priest, but he didn't know what we shot, and we had somebody back there talking to him about ending the war in Vietnam and stuff while we shot the scene, and then he came to the opening and started practically crying when he saw the scene. I said, I swear to you, I'll never tell where we shot it, and I never have to this day.
Is it strange now to see the film being screened at a major venue like the IFC Center?
Well, the IFC is home to me. That's where Hairspray opened, yeah. My original Hairspray. The last time I appeared ever in person with Divine was there. So it's kind of home for me. I'm really happy it's going to be there.
Considering its early history, I assume most of our listeners aren't acquainted with the film. Can you give us a sense of what Multiple Maniacs is about?
Well, it's a melodrama.
That the FCC will not object to.
Yeah, I know. It's about a touring group, the Cavalcade of Perversions, that lures suburbanites in to see things that would shock their sensibility, and then they murder and rob them. And then they're on the scape, and it's involved a melodrama about divorce, and then Divine is going crazier and crazier, and she's raped by a lobster. And it's a monster movie. Mm-hmm. It's really, it's Divine was my Godzilla. And I always said Divine was not transgendered. Divine wanted to be Gorgo, not a woman.
Divine wanted to be not even a drag queen. She wanted.
He was a drag. Divine, he was a fat person. He was too hot wearing those wigs and stuff. He did it when he was paid to, when he was in movies and when he did his recording career. But he never just walked around in drag, ever in his whole life.
Her in the movie, her boyfriend lures housewives and their husbands into this freak show where they're appalled by what they see.
Yeah, but
and they're made fun of. But won't most moviegoers be appalled by a couple of things in that show too?
Well, licking a bicycle seat—that's not that bad these days. That's kind of almost whimsical.
Mm. Okay, where did you get the original idea for doing it as a freak show?
Well, I always wanted to make exploitation films for art theaters. And when I was a kid, I went to the Timonium Fair, which is the same place Diane Arbus took some of those sideshow photos. And they had a freak show. And I went every year. And they had a special tent at the end where you had to pay more to go in. And that's sort of what happens here. And then you get robbed and murdered. Mm. But it was from going to real freak shows. And I would go see the fat lady. And she had a special tent. And she's just sitting there on a folding chair in a polka dot dress with bees around. There's always bees at state fairs. And most people would walk and be so uptight they would just leave because it was just you and her sitting there. But I stayed and I stared and she glared at me. And it sort of gave me this real thrill of show business.
I got the feeling that that monster in that 15-foot lobster scene, it reminded me of William Castle's The Tingler.
Well, I wasn't thinking of it at the time, but The Tingler was a huge influence. I have a replica of The Tingler on my mantle in my living room in Baltimore right today. It was made by Vincent Perenio, the first production designer for all my movies. He went on, he did The Wire, Homicide, done a million great movies and shows. He made it, but you can see his legs. He and his brother are in it. You can see his legs.
Didn't you also make a Smell-O-Vision movie once?
Yes, called Polyester. That was later, yes, and it came with an Odorama card.
Did you feel like you were something of a freak when you were growing up in suburban Maryland?
Well, when I was growing up, the word freak was good. It meant, like hippie, crazy, pothead, that kind of thing. So, yes, I was proud to be one, except I didn't feel... I knew I never fit in from the very beginning, but that was not really traumatic for me because I wanted bohemia. I read about bohemia in Life magazine when I was maybe 8 years old, and I knew that's what I wanted.
But was there much bohemia
no,
in Baltimore?
No, that was a problem. You had to really look for it when Lutherville, Maryland. Well, I did go downtown eventually, and there was a beatnik bar called Martix. And my parents, I have to give them credit at the end, my mother would drive me down there and drop me off in the alley outside, and she said, maybe you'll find people you want here. Maybe you can find something.
Well, you ran your Dreamland Studios from your bedroom, and some of the sequences are shot in your parents' backyard. Did they know what you were doing?
No, they didn't want to know. My parents learned a long time ago not to snoop because they did in the beginning and they found stuff that was worse than they ever imagined. So they stopped snooping. No, my mother met Divine that day when we were filming the Cavalcade of Version, and Divine was dressed in a one-piece woman's white bathing suit covered in fake glove. Blood carrying an axe. And he made it worse, though. He was so uptight, he took his wig off. So it was basically a man in a woman, and my mother just served us tea and tried to be polite.
But they obviously were loving. They funded your early movies.
Yeah, and I paid them back. They were, yes, in hindsight, they were incredibly loving because everything I did, no one said it was good then. And they were humiliated by the reviews, were like really hostile. And the neighbors were horrified. There's a scene where Divine, carrying an axe, looks in a neighbor's window. I didn't even ask the neighbor. She could have been having her Sunday morning breakfast and look up from the table, and there's Divine snarling at her through her front window. Yes, they were very, because they realized that no matter what, I had this career I was doing, even when I was very young, and what else could I do? I think they just figured, we better cut our losses here.
Well, did they live long enough to see you succeed?
Oh, yes, completely they did. My parents' happiest night when first night of Hairspray on Broadway. And so, oh, yeah, they were completely proud and everything. But my father did say after he saw my last movie, it was funny. I hope I never see it again. So to this day, they did teach me humor in a real way, too. And they taught me the tyranny of good taste is how I was raised, and that's how I knew the rules to break them.
My guest is John Waters, who directed, produced, edited, and wrote Multiple Maniacs, which is opening at the IFC Center tomorrow. Devine starred in most of your movies until he died in 1988?
He died 2 weeks after Hairspray opened. Yep.
How did the two of you meet?
We met. He moved with his parents that, oddly enough, ran a children's nursery school, and he was their only child. Maybe not the best ad for that. They moved about six houses away from my parents when we were in high school.
How much of your success do you think you owe to Devine?
Certainly a lot in the beginning, because I made Devine vehicles. It was like Susan Hayward pictures. Mm-hmm. I wrote movies for Devine. And Devine didn't write them, and in the beginning he would say, should I say this stuff? I mean, he was even like nervous to say it. But then eventually he got used to it and liked it and could say my lines just in such a wonderful way.
The cast and crew that you repeatedly used in your films were called Dreamlanders. How important was it for you to build a good rapport with the people that you worked with?
Certainly, I'm still friends with him. Mink Stoll just came and visited me in Provincetown last week.
Mink Stoll worked as a techie and also appeared in the film.
Well, she worked behind the scenes, yeah, but she mostly was the actress in it. Devine killed her in every movie I ever made, practically.
She was Devine's lover in this film.
And, yes, an enemy, though, at the end. But, yes, Mink and I have been friends for 50 years. Pat Moran, who casts all my movies, has won Emmys since and everything. She casts everything. So I think it's very important to have friends your whole life.
Some Dreamlanders, like Edith Massey, you just found on the street of Baltimore.
Well, I found her in the bar in Multiple Maniacs where she actually works, Pete's Hotel. That's filmed where I actually met her. She worked there for real.
Did most of them share your sensibility? Did they enjoy doing this kind of thing and shocking?
Yes, I think Edith said, I like what comes afterwards. I hate doing it while we make it. But everybody else, yes, it was group madness. It was shared. It was like a political cell.
And a shared aesthetic.
Yes.
But then you mellowed a bit with films like Hairspray.
Well, my last movie got an NC-17, lost the appeal with the censor board, and was about sex addicts taking over a neighborhood. I don't think I think I ended my movie career right where I began it. Trouble.
But you haven't made a film in 10 years.
Well, that's why.
Is that it? Your parents aren't willing to fund you anymore?
No, they didn't fund me. The studios did. But what happens? The last two movies didn't make money. My last two books were on the bestseller list, so I write books now. I signed a two-book deal for now. But I had, since then, three development deals in the last decade, that movies that didn't happen, but Hollywood paid me to write them.
But even with something like Hairspray, you featured a confident fat girl, and although you've been quite thin all of your life. What draws you to overweight women or men in drag playing fat women?
Well, I've had good luck with ample women, as we call them. I think it started with Devine, certainly, who was the opposite of what most female impersonators or drag queens look like then, and I think he changed drag forever. He made them all edgy and confrontational. And then it went to Ricky Lake because I thought putting a fat girl as the star, she's never the star. She's usually this wisecracking sidekick. So she gets the guy everything. She stood for every outsider ever. But when Devine died, I never did that again. I couldn't replace Devine, so I hired Johnny Depp.
Well, you were in Baltimore. Every one of your films was shot in Baltimore.
Yeah.
So somebody like Ricky Lake would find you?
We find her. We're regular casting agents in New York. And they were cast conventionally.
Because she
later
was terrific.
Yeah, she was great. Are you kidding? She's introducing me tomorrow night in Fire Island when I do my show.
And how did you find Johnny Depp? Again, casting agent?
Johnny Depp was at the time he was Justin Bieber. He was the hugest TV star for 21 Jump Street. He was a teen idol. And he hated being a teen idol. So stick with us. We'll kill that. And we did in a good way, because after he made Crybaby, he was in Edward Scissorhands. So Johnny's had a great career.
He's getting bad publicity recently. Maybe that means you could do another film with him.
No, I love Johnny. Here's all I know about that is I was with him in the days when he was drunk and crazy, and he was always a gentleman to all women when I was around him.
Meanwhile, we have this film, Multiple Maniacs, which will be opening tomorrow at the IFC Center. How long is it running?
Well, we'll see. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
And you're not doing any live appearances?
No, there. I'm introducing the film tomorrow night and answering questions, yeah.
The problem is it's sold out.
Yes, that's not a problem to me.
No, but I mean, it's one of the reasons I was almost reluctant to mention it because I don't want anybody to be disappointed.
Well, it's playing there. The rest of, it's in a run. It's just those two shows opening night, but you can certainly see it, and you don't really need me. The film will deliver, I hope.
John Waters, it's always a pleasure having you on
our show. Thank you for having me again.
So write more books and make another movie.
I will, hopefully.